Attention, you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. The active ingredient in this program is common sense, which has been documented to prevent and even cure liberalism. Be advised that listening may cause you to lean to the right. The doctor will be with you momentarily. Here's your host, Todd Huff.
Well, did you see this latest poll? What, Wall Street Journal, Marist College, I believe, poll regarding the South Carolina primary? I mean, Trump's been winning most of these polls by, 10, 15%. I think in general, you'll find him at about 35%. You'll find Cruz at about 20%. You'll find Rubio not too far, really close to that, maybe 15 to 20% as well. But in this latest poll, which look, polling is an instrument. Polling is a tool. It's not the final tally is what matters. Polling is only used as an instrument to kind of measure where we are, where we think the results are going to turn out. But this latest poll has Trump at 28% and Ted Cruz up to 23%. So Trump had dropped, according, if this poll is right, Trump had dropped 8 points, while Cruz had increased, I believe, about 3 points. Ironically, interestingly enough, these were the exact numbers between Trump and Cruz going into the Iowa caucus during the last poll, moving into that the Iowa caucus on February 1st. The weekend before, the polling showed that Trump was at 28, Cruz was at 23, and Cruz ended up winning that. Now, that doesn't mean that'll happen here. This poll may be an outlier. This may not be reality at all, but who knows? South Carolina, the primary is tomorrow. We will know tomorrow night, Sunday morning, somewhere around there, who the GOP winner of the South Carolina primary will be. So anyway, guys, thanks for joining us. It is Friday. It is February 19th. It's a pleasure to be here. You know, I don't share a whole lot of stuff like this, but I've got a date this weekend. And you might be wondering, why do I have a date? Because I'm married, and I'm not talking about dating. Taking my wife out on a date. I've got a date with my 4-year-old. I'm going to a daddy-daughter dance tomorrow. Now, I'll tell you, I asked my 4-year-old, I asked her probably a couple months ago. I said, hey, would you want to go with daddy to this dance? And her response was no. She rejected me. She told me no, and she was pretty adamant about this. No, Daddy, I don't want to go to a dance. I think in her mind, at least I'm telling myself this, I think in her mind we were going to be out there, you know, break dancing in front of a big audience or something. That's, of course, not going to happen. My dancing skills are nothing to write home about. In fact, they're probably borderline atrocious, but after months here of working on her, trying to soften her, I've finally gotten her to commit and to attend the daddy-daughter dance tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to this, and maybe I'll share a little bit about that next week. But anyway, lots of good things going on. Got a basketball game tomorrow. My son plays basketball, upward basketball. And I'm a coach, assistant coach there. And last week I was handed the reins as we... The coach's 2 children were ill, so I had to run the show there. There's a lot of stuff. You know, when you're a parent, when you've got little kids, or even if you've got older kids, there are a lot of things that can vie for your attention and time, and a lot of these things are a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to both the basketball game this weekend and the daddy-daughter dance that my daughter finally, reluctantly, agreed to go with me. And attend tomorrow. So, incidentally, I told my wife, I hope I hope this is a precursor of things to come. When a young boy asks for my daughter to go on a date, no, gee, I don't even want to think about this, but when that happens, I hope she gives him just the dose of what she had given me with the flat-out rejection. No, I don't want to go. I don't want to do that with you. So get lost. That's kind of what it was like. But anyway, after much persistence and much patience and just proving to her that I am worthy, in fact, of attending this date with, this going to this dance with. So anyway, we might share a little bit about that on Monday. But anyway, back to this this thing in the South Carolina primaries. We've got Hillary, incidentally. Hillary's up almost 2-1 over the Nutty Professor in South Carolina. I think the numbers are 60-32. That's what it is today. Now, keep in mind, the Democrat primary in South Carolina is actually is a week from tomorrow. They have the Nevada caucus tomorrow. The Democrats do. The Republicans have the South Carolina primary tomorrow, and then the Nevada caucus on Tuesday, the 23rd. Incidentally, and I've mentioned this before, thinking about the 23rd reminded me of this. We are going to be on Red State Talk Radio on Monday. We're going to launch, be able to be heard there at redstatetalkradio.com. I'll link to that on the website. February 22nd, we will launch midnight to 1 a.m., which on streaming radio, on online radio, is not as bad as it would sound if I said that was our time on a terrestrial or a regular AM/FM station. Those time slots are not as popular on regular radio. You know, daytime is king for radio, and for streaming online radio, it's nighttime. So anyway, I hope we find some new listeners. In fact, you might have to listen to me explain a little bit about the program, introduce 3 and 3s, which heck, maybe we'll get JDOT to do another 3 and 3 next week. I'm not sure about that, but you're gonna hear me talk about the program. You know, give a little bit of information as we launch next week. But the format, again, as I've said, we'll take on. I may have said too much about the changes because I'm not sure you're going to notice a whole lot. It's going to be a 55-minute program with just more uniform segments. This past week, we've not followed a strict schedule because of all the other things that we're doing to prepare for the launch. But anyway, Monday we launch on Red State Talk Radio. I'm really looking forward to that, by the way. But anyway, Nevada caucus is on Tuesday, which again, it's believed that Trump, according to the polls, is going to win both South Carolina and Nevada. But this latest poll, I mean, who knows, right? Who knows what's going to happen? That's the reason we have elections. I mean, I'm an athlete, and it bothers me. I'm going to tell you, when I played football in high school, basketball, I ran track, I have to tell you, there was not one single time I took the field expecting, or I took the court, field, whatever, got in the blocks, expecting not to win. Now, that may seem ludicrous to some people. I don't know. But I always took I went out there with the idea of winning. I mean, in my mind, if you're not going to go out there to win, what are you doing? I mean, of course, you know, I have problems with this whole thing, and maybe I'm a little old-fashioned. I don't know. But when I hear people say, you know, well, it's all about having fun. Well, winning's fun. And I don't understand the fear associated with saying, I'm going out here with this intention of winning, as though if I lose, my life is going to crumble. Look, we lose in a variety of ways on a regular basis. I guess unless you're Trump, who's told us he's never lost anything in his life. And I could give you a few examples of losses he's had. I'm not going to do that. That's not the point of this. But my point is, we all lose, right? And losing is not necessarily a bad thing. I actually think that the sooner we teach kids about winning and losing, the sooner we teach them that you still have value in spite of what happened here. You know, we want to insulate them from losing a soccer game or a basketball game because we don't keep the score. But the kids keep the score. I mean, They know. It's because we're wired to want to achieve, to accomplish a goal, to win. And I don't understand that the fear of saying, I am going out here with the intention of winning. If you fail, it may sting, it may hurt. I mean, and some losses in life can hurt big time. I mean, you lose a business or a marriage or something along those lines. I mean, that can leave you wounded for a long, long time. But when we're talking sports, you know, the idea that it's that important to where I can't function for the rest of the day or the rest of the week or something? I mean, come on. As a society, we have overemphasized the impact of losing as a little kid. I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. But anyway, my point is, when I went to play, I played to win. I didn't think, what if I lose? I just went out there to play in such a way that we could win. I mean, that's biblical, right? I mean, Paul says to run the race marked before you and run. He's going to run in such a way that he might win. And the whole point is, when you engage in that competitive theater, whatever it is, when you engage in the political competitive primary of South Carolina, that's where the tally of the votes matters there. So the polls at that point are irrelevant. Only they're helpful insofar as they help give us a tool to estimate what people say they're going to do on game day, on the day that they vote. And so these polls are, I don't want to say completely meaningless, because I doubt that you're going to find the complete opposite of what they say. I don't think you're going to find Kasich at 38% and Trump at 4% or what have you. But it doesn't mean that Trump's going to win. It means, statistically speaking, he's probably going to win. But it doesn't mean he's going to win. I mean, statistically speaking, the New England Patriots were supposed to beat the New York Giants. Statistically speaking, even this year, the Carolina Panthers were supposed to beat the Denver Broncos. Statistically speaking, the Golden State Warriors have to win 25 of the next 30 games in order to finish ahead of the Chicago Bulls' 95-96 season record of 72 wins. And according to these analysts, these folks that calculate the odds, they say the Warriors have a 36% chance of doing that. But come the end of the season, and this is the whole point, come the end of the season, the Warriors either did or did not do that. I suppose they could tie, so they could have fewer, they could have not broken the record, they could have tied the record, or they could have broken the record when it comes April 20th or whenever the end of the season is. And the only way you get to that is when you play the game. And so polls matter. But this poll with Cruz cutting it to 5% may or may not be relevant. It may be something that's an outlier, or it could be something that's showing that people are, as they get closer to the election, are rethinking their choices. Maybe they like a lot of what Trump says and does, but they like the ideas. They like the firm ideas of Cruz and constitutional conservatism. I don't know. Maybe they'll choose Rubio. Rubio's, he's back a little ways, but I think he was at what? Let me look here. They had Rubio at 15%. I mean, this is very similar to the final poll, this Wall Street Journal poll, that we saw as the final poll going into the Iowa caucus. And to round it out, by the way, Trump's at 28, Cruz at 23, Rubio's 15, Bush is at 13, which that's a big surge. I mean, Bush has spent a large amount of time at 5%, 8%. Then we have Kasich and Carson both at 9%. I mean, I have to be honest. I've said on here, I think the world of Ben Carson. If he performs where these polls say he's going to come out, I mean, his campaign is in very, very serious trouble. And I would think the same for Kasich. I don't know financially where his campaign is. I mean, we could very quite possibly have four, I mean, who knows, three or four leaving South Carolina. And what does that do? What does that do to the dynamic? Does at that point, are we looking at, you know, 35, 30, 33 for each one of these guys? Are we around those numbers? Does Trump continue to pick up some support from the folks that are going to drop out? I guess it's possible for all six of these guys to get through the weekend and out of Nevada as well. But I don't know. You look at Carson and Kasich in particular, and even with Bush. I mean, I always hold Bush out on to kind of a different standard because of all the money and the establishment support he's been given and his name. I mean, while he's never made any real impact in this election process other than being the punching bag for Donald Trump at times, he is increasing, but he's not. If he wasn't a Bush and if he didn't have all this money, there's no way this guy would be in the election any longer or in the process. But he's up to 13%. And then what happens? That's Kasich and Carson. Let's say that they drop out. What happens to that? That's 18%. Where does that go? Does Kasich support go to Bush? Does it go to Rubio? I mean, heck, I don't know. Carson support, does it go to Cruz, Rubio? Does it split equally amongst the other folks? Does Trump pick up some of this stuff? And then on the Democrat side, we've got Hillary, which this is how it normally works. Hillary, when polling starts in a state a few weeks or months out, she's normally really far ahead of the crazy, nutty professor Bernie Sanders. But as it gets closer, as is the case with Iowa, she's in a neck-and-neck race there. I'm sure they're gonna get the coins out. They're getting the quarters ready. Huma Abedin is over there trying to get a two-sided Hillary Clinton quarter into the pockets of the folks running the Nevada caucus. They're putting weighted quarters, whatever they've got. I mean, I'm sure if this comes down to coin tosses, Hillary's got another 15 or 20 consecutive wins in her pocket. But the closer it gets to a state making a decision, on the Democrat side, they're moving towards Bernie Sanders. As crazy as this is, they move towards Bernie Sanders. Away from Hillary, toward Bernie. In fact, I saw a clip of the town hall. Hillary at a town hall. I don't know if it was last night or recently. I mean, she's getting booed. She's telling a person that in the audience that she's rude and she's not going to call on her. I mean, Hillary is in, I'm serious, utter and complete meltdown. It is seriously, the wheels have come off. We can pretend like they haven't, but she has an absolute mess. I mean, we've given, Jeb Bush a hard time, but Jeb Bush, the amount of things that have happened that are the direct result of the candidate in a negative way. Hillary Clinton's had more negative direct impact on her campaign than Jeb Bush has had on his. I mean, Jeb Bush just isn't getting any traction. I mean, granted, he's not winning support. But look at Hillary. Everywhere you look, there's a scandal, there's a controversy, there's something she's doing to make herself unlikable. I mean, Bush just isn't getting any traction. I'm not saying his campaign's perfect, but Hillary's campaign is far and away the worst campaign that's being run by anybody. She's just starting with such a big lead. She's been spotted so many points that she's got a lot of room for error. And I tell you what, she runs it down to the razor wire every single time. She's still up 28 in South Carolina, but who knows? Who knows what's going to happen here? So, guys, I got to stop and take a break. When we get back, I want to continue talking a little bit about the election. Plus, I want to talk a little bit about some of the flack that Ted Cruz has taken recently, including a Photoshop picture of Marco Rubio. So you're listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. We'll be back in just a minute. Make sure your booster shots are up to date by signing up for our free monthly email newsletter. It's educational, it's fun, and it's free. Sign up today by going to theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. That's theantidotoliberalism.com/newsletter. For you, the listeners of The Antidote to Liberalism, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've been a member of Audible since May of 2014, and I love it. I've listened to novels, books on business, political books, you name it. In fact, one of my most recent downloads was given to me by one of our listeners, Ben Carson's America the Beautiful. What a good man and solid presidential candidate. But if you'd rather check out a great novel instead, I highly recommend The 12th Imam by Joel Rosenberg. Of course, you'll want to get the rest of his books in the series after that, too. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/antidote. Again, that's audibletrial.com/antidote for your free audiobook. There's nothing to lose with this free trial, so why not give it a try? Welcome back to The Antidote to Liberalism. You know, before the break, we were talking about South Carolina. We were talking about the primaries in general. We were talking about one of these polls that shows Cruz closing in on Trump. And look, I don't want to, for those of you that are Cruz supporters, I don't want to make this out to be prettier than what it might be. There's lots of other polls that show Cruz is down 15%, 35 to 20, thereabouts. So this is the outlier. This is the one that's a little bit different than the rest. And in fact, I'm going to do this right now as we're talking here. But if you jump onto Real Clear Politics, realclearpolitics.com, which I've got a friend who does this first thing every morning. He goes to realclearpolitics.com. He looks at the polling data, which, look, this stuff's important. But I'm just not one, especially when it's months and months out. What is this? What does it tell you? It tells you where people are today, maybe. I mean, how many polls have we seen that are not right, especially even in Iowa? Even in Iowa in days before the decision was made. And I know a caucus is different than a primary. You're able to be influenced by the opinions of those in that caucus more so than you are, you know, when you walk into a booth at a primary. They don't let campaign literature within a certain amount of feet of the entrance to the polling location. But nonetheless, who cares what it says in a hypothetical head-to-head matchup? Who's going to win, Trump or Hillary? Cruz or Hillary? Cruz or Bernie Sanders? At this point, we are so far away from that. I don't know what we can really gather from that. That process hasn't even started. But when you look at these other polls, I'm going to read. This is on realclearpolitics.com. There's ARG, Emerson, SC House, GOP, that's one. Harper, the NBC, Wall Street Journal, Marist poll, which is the one we've been talking about. There's a Fox News poll, Monmouth, PPP poll. If you look at this, PPP is public policy something. But if you look at these polls, Trump is up on average 14.8%. And that's looking at these as a whole, collectively. If you look at the averages, it has Trump right at 33%, Cruz at 18%, Rubio's at 17%. Bush is 10.5, Kasich is 10, Carson's at 6.9. That's if you take the average of all those, seven or eight polls that I rattled off there. But Trump is up 12 in one poll, 17 in another, 16 in another, 12 in another. He's up 5 in the one I was referencing earlier. He's up 13 in another poll, 16 in another, 17 in another. And the dates of these polls. Now, granted, I'll be honest, I mean, the margin of error on a few of these is pretty big. Well, I don't want 5%, but they've only got 400 and some likely voters. One of these polls has 5,800 likely voters, and it has Trump up 16. So for those of you that are Ted Cruz supporters, I mean, look, this 28-23 poll, NBC Wall Street Journal Marist poll, may very well be indicative of something, but look, if you look at the total picture, it's not necessarily good news for Ted Cruz. He's down 14, 15 points. But we still have a long way to go. And I know, you know, winning these states, winning these primaries is important. But this year's a little bit different. I mean, we have a lot of candidates. We had a lot of candidates. A lot have dropped out. We're down to 6 now. And what happens whenever we're down to 2 or 3? And maybe we'll get there sooner than we think. I don't know. But the point is, we have a long way to go, especially if we've got 4 candidates that are still going to be running into Super Tuesday, or even more. I don't know. I mean, Super Tuesday is a big deal, a big day. And given how these delegates are allocated, I've been saying this from the beginning. If people have enough money and support to stay in this race, and given how hard it is to accumulate delegates, which is the score, which is how we determine the winner, it's not an easy route to the 1,237 delegates needed to capture the Republican nominee for president. Nomination, I should say. The Republican nomination for president. But anyway, this is why we have the election. This is why we have the primary. We'll see. I mean, all these polls can't be right because there's a pretty big gap in some of these. So if you're in South Carolina, I mean, get out there and vote. You know, that's another thing. Who says they're going to vote and doesn't vote? Who says who's one that's determined to be a unlikely voter, but yet they go to the polls? Did you see that turnout in South Carolina is expected to be record turnout? I expect, by the way, to see this across the board. I expect there to be a big turnout even as we move all the way through this election, because we are at a critical moment. I mean, and I think all sides look at it as a critical moment. The socialists see this as the opportunity to usher in someone who's going to basically undo all the so-called evils of America, replace capitalism with socialism, control the free markets, make it fair and even, and provide goodies and freebies to everybody. They see this as a legitimate opportunity for that. Our side, the conservative side, sees this as an opportunity to regain control of the executive branch, to reinstitute the constitutional authority, the balance of powers, a constitutional president, one that's going to undo illegal, anti-constitutional acts that have been put into place by President Obama. We see this as an opportunity to nominate Supreme Court justices that are actually going to interpret the Constitution, not act as a group of oligarchs that are legislating from the bench. And then there's probably even another group that says, look, we've dealt with politicians in general for long enough. And these are the Trump supporters, I think. And I don't think this encapsulates the whole thing, but I think that this is accurate. This describes a pretty good chunk of the Trump movement, of those that are behind Donald Trump. And I think they think, look, we have done it with politicians for a long time, and they have made it worse and worse and worse. They promise us things, they don't do them. They tell us they're going to do things. They do political double talk. They lie to us. They manipulate things. They raise taxes. They put us into wars that we shouldn't have been in. Whatever the viewpoints here. And they think we need someone that's not a politician. And a lot of these folks are conservatives that are disheartened. You know, that they've seen in 2010 and 2014 two Republican victories, two conservative victories. And then we get control of the House and we get control of the Senate and we don't do anything with it. They say, look, this is so far off the tracks here. We have gotten so far into the weeds that whatever Trump's ideology is kind of secondary or even tertiary importance here. What is most important is to find someone that is going to shake this place up. It is such a mess. Conservative ideology, liberal ideology, socialist ideology, that doesn't even matter. This is what they say. I'm not saying I agree with this. But we want to shake this up. There's so many fundamental issues at stake here, first and foremost, before we even can get to ideology. That's what they think. We need someone that knows how to win again. This is what a Trump supporter will tell you. We need someone who is not going to do things the the standard way. We need someone that's going to build a wall. We've heard politicians tell us for decades that they're going to secure the border, and they haven't. They believe Trump will. We've heard politicians talk about the trade deficit for decades, generations, and it only seems to be widening. So they say, look, Trump's going to do something about it. He's going to fix it. I don't know about his ideology in and out, but I think he's going to make the trade deficit smaller. This is what they think. And the point is, I think that all these people, all these groups see this as an opportunity to advance their ideas. And to some degree, they may all be right. That's why it's important to vote. You know, I encourage you, if you're not plugged in somewhere, I mean, this program is obviously a community of conservatives, many that are Christians. Get plugged in here. That's fine. But it's not just here. Look at things like the Heritage Foundation. Look at things like Americans for Prosperity. I mean, there's others. Find a Tea Party group. Find a way to put feet to your ideology. And we can help do that. We can help plug you in. If you go to our website, you're going to find, as we continue to build that out, you're going to find more and more sources. Educate yourself. Get some of these books from these great thinkers, whether it's Mark Levin's Plunder and Deceit, or whether it's, you know, getting an Audible trial and just listening, whether it's subscribing to, I mean, other podcasts. Or I've got a book right now that I'm listening to on Audible. It's very long. It's incredibly long, but it's a Patriot's History of the United States. I think that's what it's titled. You know, the thing is, once you start listening to an Audible book, you don't see the title. You just play it. You know, you're not holding the book in your hand. I think it's called A Patriot's History to the United States, of the United States. And I listen to that, and it's very educational. I learn a lot. I mean, if I'm doing some of the things in the office that don't require, that are more repetitive in nature, if I'm sending, you know, certain emails or printing off, I don't know, invoices and checks and so forth, I might try to listen to that stuff. And there's a tremendous amount of information that will help me be a better communicator, a more knowledgeable host, that will help me influence other people to be conservative. And these things matter, especially in these times. You know, a lot of times we can gloss over very difficult times in American history. Even when we went to war with Great Britain, when we declared our war, our independence, it wasn't as though there was this universal support for that. There were those that favored it, there were those that opposed it, and there were those that just didn't want anything. They didn't want to be involved with it. Leave me alone, I'm living my life. There were those that were incredibly loyal to the throne of England. There were those that believed that what was happening, and I would fall into this category, what was happening was an abuse of power by the king. Whether it was taxation or just not respecting their rights, making them quarter soldiers. I mean, there's a whole list of examples. Read the Declaration of Independence. It gives numerous examples, dozens of examples of where the king had abused his authority. And when the colonists approached him to try to right these wrongs, they were ignored, they were blown off, they were oftentimes faced with harsher consequences. And we're engaged in a similar struggle here today. It's easy to say Americans are apathetic. Yes, many Americans are apathetic, but there were apathetic Americans in 1775 too. It's easy to look across the political spectrum and say, how on earth is Bernie Sanders getting this sort of support? These kids, these young college kids, these disillusioned adults. I mean, I don't know who all comprises his base, but I do know that they're hardcore socialists. They have given up. They have given up that the American way is the way that it should be. They don't believe that it should be left up to individuals for their own, to make their own way. It should be the responsibility of a government, for a government to take from someone and then give to them or give to someone else. And you can look at that and say, man, how do we get to this point? And you know what? I don't have all the answers to that. Part of it's education, lack thereof. Part of it is just the constant barrage. I mean, we've gradually been exposed to this stuff, to socialistic ideas. We've been exposed to it in ways that we haven't even known we're exposed to it. And when you don't know to even question something, I remember going, what's the park? It's in Virginia. My brother-in-law lives in Virginia Beach. And we went to visit him, and we took a trip. Oh, gee. I'm drawing a blank on what the name of the national park is. But you go, and it's... You read these placards that are placed around the park, and it'll say things like, before the white man arrived, the fish in this river was, 25 feet long, and they were abundant, and they were just laying out on the beach, suntanning, and all this sort of stuff. I mean, again, exaggerating, but then when the white man arrived, the evil white man who brought with him capitalism and free markets that were only devised to keep down the native man, to exploit his land, to take his fish. Now the average size of the fish is the size of a penny or what? I mean, whatever nonsense it is, that's what all these placards said. And my question to my wife was, well, who, before the white man came here, before the English came here, where was this building? Who was writing the paychecks for this staff? Who was employing the parks department here? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous, the subtle little attacks on our society and the way that we do things, and especially when you realize the opposite in many cases is so true. Capitalism has largely eradicated many of the problems that we've faced throughout human history. I mean, many diseases had been wiped out. Famine, in large part, has been addressed through capitalism. America feeds Americans plus much of the rest of the world. And it's not through luck or good fortune, although God blessed us. I don't mean to say he didn't, but it's not through luck or good fortune that happened. So anyway, guys, I'm long here. I'm going to stop and take one more break. When we get back, I'm going to wrap up for the week and get ready to start with the new format on Monday. So anyway, thanks for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. We'll be back in just a minute.
Are you looking for an alternative to employer-provided health insurance? Maybe your rates have skyrocketed, or maybe your employer doesn't provide health insurance. And then you visited healthcare.gov and realized how much of a debacle Obamacare really is. Why don't you take a look at what my family and I do for our healthcare needs? We're members of Samaritan Ministries, and we absolutely love it. If you're looking for a biblical, non-insurance approach to your healthcare needs, visit theantidotetoliberalism.com/healthcare to learn more. And as an added bonus, my listeners will receive an exclusive $50 credit, but only when you complete the application on my website. Go to theantidotetoliberalism.com to apply or to get more information. My family and I love it, and we think you will too. God bless.
Welcome back. Before the break, we're talking about just the subtle attacks on the American way, on the American way of life, on the things that we hold dear and important. And we have a whole generation now that has embraced that, and they're supporting Bernie Sanders, the nutty professor himself. And though you and I listen to what Bernie Sanders says, and we think, how on earth can anyone embrace this? This quite literally is the sort of thing you heard coming from a Karl Marx, from a Joseph Stalin. Now, I'm not accusing Bernie Sanders of being a hardcore communist, a complete totalitarian. I'm not. But this socialism is the precursor of communism every time. I've said on here before, if you're going to give someone complete control of your finances and your way of life, your livelihood, if you're going to let them tell you who you have to take care of and what you have to do for other groups of people, it only stands in the natural progression that they can then begin to tell you more and more how to live your individual life because your obligation is to the rest of the community. Up to and including the point when communism says, look, religion only divides us, so we're outlawing religion. The state essentially becomes the god. And while the Soviets did allow some churches, many, many people were imprisoned, were taken to the gulags because of their faith. They didn't mind there being churches so long as people went there, sang a few songs, left, and didn't have any meaningful change in their lives. They did not, however, want people living out the gospel. They did not, however, want people having a higher authority to which they really believed they should answer, higher than the Soviet Union. And all I'm saying is the ideas that you hear being spoken on stage by the nutty professor are the very same ideas that you find spoken by any big government lunatic, from a Hugo Chavez, a Fidel Castro, a Joseph Stalin. Again, I'm not accusing him of being a totalitarian or anything along those lines. What I am saying is that it's the same ideas and that socialism always tends, unchecked socialism grows into communism. It does. Then they start building walls. You know, we get on Donald Trump for building a wall to keep people out that aren't supposed to be here. Communism builds walls to keep people in. It's that atrocious to where people want to flee it. America is a magnet for the rest of the world because we have a lifestyle, a way of doing things that is attractive. Communism is so deplorable that people want out of it, and they build walls to keep people in. I mean, who do you think placed the guards on the Berlin Wall, and what was the purpose of them being there? You could naively think it was to keep people from getting in, but it was to keep people from getting out. No one wanted to go there. No one wanted to step into the world of Soviet communism willingly. They wanted away from that. Look, and I did you a disservice. I said before the last segment that I was going to talk a little bit about this photoshopped picture of Marco Rubio and Barack Obama. Apparently, the Cruz campaign had put together this photoshopped picture of Marco Rubio shaking hands with Barack Obama. Incidentally, do not associate the lack of a transition there between hardcore communist and socialist to Marco Rubio. There's zero intent there. There's no correlation other than I just looked up and saw that I did not tell you I was going to talk about what I was going to talk about. So the Cruz campaign made it look like Rubio, who was significantly shorter and, you know, kind of looking up and smiling real big at Obama, reaching out, shaking hands, and Obama's kind of towering over him, looking down upon him as though, you know, whatever. I mean, you can see the picture. I'll link to it on the website. You may have already seen this as well. And Cruz's campaign gets attacked because apparently people are trying to say that this is another piece of evidence of Cruz lying, which I get tired of this, by the way. Cruz lying because that's not a real picture. I mean, look, I work. One of my businesses is in marketing. When it comes to communicating a message, I mean, it's obvious that this is not meant to try to be passed off as a real encounter. It is symbolically stating something. I mean, come on, anybody with objectively looking at this. This was not intended to say, oh, look, Rubio and Barack Obama shook hands. I guarantee you they've all shaken hands with Obama. I mean, it's just a pleasantry. They're not bowing down to him, incidentally, as Obama bows to people. But they're shaking his hand. What does that mean? This is a symbolic gesture saying that on this particular issue, Obama and Rubio are close. They have the same opinion. Now, Rubio can say that's absolutely not the case, and here's why. That's what I would rather hear. Instead of, oh, this is clearly a Photoshop picture that's trying to show me as being Obama's friend. Clearly not the case. And by the way, I listened last night to the town hall, and Donald Trump was on there. Watched a little bit of that. I think all these guys do better in these. I mean, it just gives you the ability to have your personality seen. It gives you the ability to not be on defense. You can kind of be casual, share your ideas while, you know, being yourself. Not having to worry about Donald Trump jumping on you in the middle of an answer to a question or one of the other candidates trying to catch you in some, you know, I don't know, something that you said that wasn't completely identical to what you just said. You're able to be free and just talk, and it's a good setting. I like it a lot. I think it's actually much, much preferred to what we see in the debates, so-called debates. Those things are just, as I've said for weeks, they're just really like group press conferences is all they are. Talking points, that sort of thing. But these charges of Cruz lying, I mean, it's gotten to the point where people just say, Cruz liar, Cruz liar, Cruz liar, Cruz liar. And what do they cite? They're citing this Photoshop picture, which I think is a major, major stretch. They're citing what he said about his campaign said about Ben Carson, which was reporting what was reported by CNN. It was reiterating a tweet and a series of reports by CNN that Carson was not moving on to New Hampshire, that he was going to Florida. In fact, he did leave and go to Florida. I think it was Florida. For personal reasons to change clothes, just to go home for a bit, I don't know, have a fresh meal. I'm not entirely sure what happened there. It's something very unusual, highly unusual. I don't know that's a lie. They didn't like these mailers that Cruz sent out saying in Iowa that said, you know, you have this score, go to the polls so that you can increase your score in voting in these Iowa caucuses. I mean, you may not like the mailer, but to say it's dishonest, I mean, it wasn't a lie. It was actually something that they purchased from the state, the data, which I believe was accurate. I mean, unless the state was cooking the books for some reason. But it's become the in vogue thing to say, Cruz liar, Cruz liar, Cruz liar. And I'm just, I don't see any evidence of that. Once you go through this and think about this case by case, I don't think that. Incidentally, I don't really think that any of the candidates have lied. I mean, some of them don't want to, as in the case with Donald Trump, he doesn't want to be questioned about his past record. He says that he's changed his positions on things like abortion, maybe health care. He may not be telling us the truth, but we don't know. He's not in a position to vote on stuff. All you can say is, look, this is what you said before, and this should be problematic to a voter. That's what you can say. But the lying takes place on the other side. The lying takes place when they're talking about Benghazi. The lying takes place when they're talking about emails and top secret documents. The lying takes place really in any time Hillary Clinton opens her mouth. That's where the disastrous campaign is taking place. That's where the disastrous primary is unfolding before our eyes. So it's not the Republican side. There is a fight, and it can get a little ugly from time to time in the Republican Party, but the unraveling is on the other side. So, guys, I am going to wrap up. As always, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for joining us. Email us, Todd@theantidotetoliberalism.com, or you can tweet me. My Twitter handle is @commonsensegear. So, guys, I'm going to wrap up. Have a great weekend. When we come back on Monday, we're going to be at 55-minute segments. We're going to be on Red State Radio, redstatetalkradio.com. And I've got some new things we're working on that are going to be plugged into the show. You'll see on Monday. But anyway, guys, have a great weekend. Look forward to seeing you Monday. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Antidote to Liberalism. Your inoculations are now up to date. But since the disease of liberalism is ubiquitous and highly contagious, we need to see you again tomorrow. In the meantime, to help you boost your immunity, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast.